I'm Lindsay.
I'm Austin.
And I'm Joe from PopX Cast,
a podcast member of the Gunna Geek Network.
Just like the show you're listening to now.
The opinions expressed are those of each individual host.
Check out all the other podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
And get ready, because geekiness begins in
3, 2, 1.
You are listening to the Starling Tribune, a podcast dedicated to the Arrow TV show.
This guy gets more airtime than the Kardashians, right?
This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, situations, and stories are the properties of Time Warner. I am the Oracle, and this is your Tribune.
Hello and welcome back to the Starling Tribune. If you're a longtime viewer slash listener, you might be going, that voice doesn't sound familiar. That's because I am not Stargate Pioneer. I am not SP. I'm Chris. I'm kind of in his seat this week. He'll be back soon. Don't worry. But until then, your reporters for this episode 9 of season 5 of the Starling Tribune are Michelle.
My favorite Christmas movie is Die Hard. It's nice to know that me, Stephen Amell, Oliver Queen, know that it is a Christmas movie, because there's two types of people in this world. Those who know Die Hard is a Christmas movie, and those who are wrong.
Isn't that the truth? And like I said, I'm Chris. I wanted a quote of my own this week, so mine is, I don't like rules or listening, which is fairly accurate for me, because I'm in my own little world sometimes. So this podcast, this latest episode of the Starling Tribune, is recorded live on Thursday, December 8th, 2016, on the official streaming home of the Gunna Geek Network, that is geeks.live. Yes, .live is a domain now, or is it a, what is the right term now? It's a domain you can buy, I guess? Yeah, .live, we're on that. I'm just rambling, don't mind me.
Well, we're also missing Neil, so happy birthday, Neil.
Happy birthday, Neil. Have fun in the Big Apple. Of course, he's there for work, so I'm not sure how much fun he's having.
Well, it's the Big Apple, so come on.
He did say in our little group chat that we have between everyone on the podcast that the office site he was in was across the street from one of the Midtown Comics locations. And he's like, I might need to step out during my lunch and go to the comic book store. And I was like, that is a great idea. I want to go to Midtown Comics.
I know.
And speaking of comics, we are just a bunch of comic enthusiasts on this show. Isn't that right, Michelle?
Look, I have my Adam Pop Funko figure. I bought him like this week, and he looks so cute and is so detailed with his little outfit and everything. I'm holding it up to the camera for the video people. I'm really sorry, audio listeners, but basically it's just the suit that we see every week on Legends.
And it's pretty awesome. I do also keep an Arrow Funko Pop right here for myself. It's the Arrow Unmasked.
Sleeves or no sleeves?
This is when he was still the Arrow, so he has sleeves still. It's the old season 1 and 2 costume, which we'll be talking about a little bit in this week's episode. Tease, tease, tease. So guys, just a friendly reminder, tonight we'll be discussing this week's episode of Arrow, as well as news, interviews, articles, and announcements that have dropped in the last week that could impact future episodes of Arrow and other shows in the DC TV verse, such as The Flash, Supergirl, and Legends of Tomorrow. And we will wildly speculate on this show, sometimes to our own detriment as we go down rabbit holes that make no sense until we re-listen to them later and go, how did I get here? And as such, we might accidentally spoil without realizing we're spoiling, because sometimes we're right when we go down one of our crazy, crazy paths. So this is your friendly reminder. Our wild speculations might actually turn into spoilers somehow, so please consider yourselves warned.
And speaking of spoilers, sometimes we geek out and talk about this week's DC Comics. So every once in a while, there could be a comic book spoiler. But we promise we'll try our best to not ruin anything for you. If you're new to the show, thank you for searching us out on the internet and joining us. If you like our content, why don't you swing by our podcast network home at GunnaGeek.com, where you can find all of our other past shows, plus a ton of other geeky videos, podcasts, and articles, all under the Gunna Geek Productions banner.
Well, thank you, Michelle, and I'm going to toss it right back to you, actually, to give us the lowdown on this latest episode of Arrow.
No problem. This episode is What We Leave Behind. It's Season 5, Episode 9. It aired on Wednesday, December 7, 2016. Director Antonio Negrete. 2 Legends of Tomorrow, 3 Arrow, 1 The Flash, and 2 of The 100, which is one of my favorite shows on the CW. Writers, a couple of people I think we might have heard of. Wendy Miracle, of course, the showrunner herself. She's written 19 Arrow. And Beth Schwartz, she's done 19 Arrow, written 2 Legends of Tomorrow, and 1 Heart of Dixie, for all of those who still loved the Heart of Dixie a long time ago.
One of these things is not like the other.
I think it's interesting how someone could go from like the Heart of Dixie into Legends of Tomorrow and Arrow. I thought that was interesting.
It is an interesting transition, and you'll find in a lot of these things that some guys, some folks, some writers start with shows and you're like, they wrote that and then they went to this? That's a completely different tone, and it's just the way these guys are wired is they're able to switch gears like that.
Well, you know, being able to write good characters and intriguing plots is something that all writers should know.
Sadly, not all do. But that's not the case in the most of the CW superhero shows lately, so we're lucking out.
Exactly.
So each week when we break down an episode of Arrow, we try and touch on some of the major themes or what we think the overall theme of this week's episode is. So Michelle, if you got to hazard a guess, what do you think this week's theme is?
Let's see, what we leave behind. Gee, I think it's going to be legacy, things that perhaps we've done in the past that comes back to haunt you. Oh, like perhaps killing somebody's dad and their son wanting revenge eventually.
Oh, I thought it was like about losing my wallet and then trying to go find it. I'm completely off base, I guess.
Yeah.
No, I think you nailed it exactly. It's all about the things that come back to haunt us. The past does come back. And in this case, Oliver's past is haunting him. And we'll touch on it later. It was very interesting the fact that our flashbacks were no longer 5 years ago, but 4 years ago to kind of illustrate what he did then that's now coming back to bite him in the butt 4 years later in season 5 of the show. It's a pretty cool transition. But before we get into the meat of it, before we start talking about the characters and the flashbacks, we always like to try and geek out about the fights some. And we did have some pretty cool fights and some one-sided fights. We opened up with a one-sided fight where Prometheus is just kind of playing with Curtis.
Hey, you know, you got to give it to Curtis. You know, he's trying to get that salmon ladder skill going, not doing so great. But he steps up and he actually gets a couple of hits in, you know, surprising his hubby Paul. But, you know, eventually he does get his butt kicked.
Yeah, which you kind of figure is going to happen because Prometheus held his own against Oliver Queen before. And we'll see later in this episode that he more than holds his own against the Green Arrow, which is kind of a bone of contention I have a little bit.
We'll talk about that.
Yeah, it'll make a little more sense then. And we did get 2 rounds of fights between Prometheus and the Green Arrow. In the first fight, that's when Oliver kind of realizes, wait a second, he has a move that I recognize. Hint, hint, hint.
It was a good fight, you know, good hand on hand and a really cool flip. And then you think wild dogs shoot the weapons out of Prometheus' hand and you think, oh, they got him. But Artemis comes along and reveals herself to be the little traitor.
I mean, we knew it was coming, but it doesn't make it any better, especially when she's in the show and she goes down to the Arrow Cave and gives everyone their customized Christmas stockings. Like, you guys are my family. And you're like, oh, this is going to suck. It hurts in my heart already. Oh, no.
Something that I mentioned, because I do live tweet the show, is like, wait a minute. Prometheus killed a bunch of people, innocent people, had nothing to do with Arrow. Nothing to do with anything, just to make his little anagram nonsense. And then she's siding with Prometheus because, like, the city needs to be protected from you, Oliver, because, like, you are the hood and you're, like, killed people.
Yeah, I mean, so we can touch on it now, I guess, because it makes sense more logically. There's interviews and things that came out that said she was not on Prometheus' side until the hood reveal comes out. And that's when she kind of went to his side versus being a plant originally, is that she lost faith in Oliver Queen. So again, it's Oliver's past coming back to haunt him in the future.
Yeah, but to go with Prometheus, that's extreme.
Yeah, well, I mean, remember, she still blames Oliver for the death of her parents, and that's probably clouding any sense of better judgment in many cases.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, they really haven't spent a lot of time on Artemis, so we're getting a lot of just these tidbits, and I really hope when the show comes back, they kind of take these loose threads and tie them together when it comes to her.
Yeah, my hope is that she'll be getting more screen time going forward, rather, because she's the traitor. She's the one that now everyone is like, how could you do this to us? Why did you do this to us? And that could lead to a very interesting dynamic. But we have until like January 25th or something like that to wait. So we have like 6 weeks for the next episode of Arrow. I hate the hiatus in the winter.
I know.
I really do. So The big fight we really need to talk about, though, is when Oliver goes off on his own. He does not bring the team with him. He goes to confront Prometheus, and the setup to that fight is incredibly creepy. As they flash back to 4 years ago, when the Hood is storming the same building and putting down cronies, and then it cuts into the future, and you see people that are killed and left in the exact same positions as the people that were killed 4 years ago. It is incredibly creepy to watch, but it does an amazing job of ramping up the tension as it comes to those two meeting face to face. Because I was sitting there, I was like, oh man, this is dark. I was like, this almost feels like Dark Knight Joker-esque, which we'll touch on later, I'm sure, too. But, ooh, it's twisted.
It was. Boy, Prometheus did his homework.
Yeah. He spared no expense in figuring out how to screw with Oliver the best here.
You know, one of the things about this season has been about Oliver's legacy, Oliver coming to terms with, has he moved on? There's been, remember in the early episodes where he came up with that, you know, reminded of his Russian proverb of always swimming forward. And one of the things is like Prometheus really got in there because here's Oliver going out alone. It's like, wait, after all that you've learned and all that you've been through, you go off alone. That's mistake number one. And he just lets Prometheus in and gets under there and just, it triggers season one Ollie. It triggers that Hood.
When Oliver's under pressure, he reverts back to his original form. We see it multiple times in this episode, which is, I need to go and do this on my own. And also in part, he wants to do it on his own to protect the people around him that keep getting involved. Like Prometheus says, everyone you touch dies. And that's what's pretty much happening here. Some people don't stay dead, though. Again, we'll get to that later. I have thoughts and conspiracy theories. We need some patented conspiracy theories.
We will. But, oh my goodness, because I keep wondering, it's like, what do you think would have happened if he had brought Speedy, at least?
Speedy might have been able to rein him in a little bit, and it's also a matter of two-on-one. One person who was trained by a leader of the League of Assassins, the other being the Green Arrow against Prometheus. You would think the good guys stand a better chance of winning, regardless of how Prometheus might have stacked the deck with traps and things like that. Poor Billy Malone might not have died had Speedy been there.
Why do you think Billy didn't fall to his knees?
Director's choice? I honestly don't know. I hadn't thought about it too much.
Look, this is an amazing episode and everything. And for Prometheus to basically gamble on that, yes, Ollie hasn't learned anything and he's going to come alone. And maybe he drugged Billy or something because he would have, you know, been able to subdue Billy. Because I keep trying to figure this out. He would have had to have subdued Billy, right? In order to have dressed him up. And then put the duct tape on. So maybe that's why. Maybe he had just kind of come out of the drugs or something like that. And he didn't know what was going on.
He did drug Curtis earlier in the episode. So there is a precedent that exists for drugging someone potentially. So I could see that as a way to make Billy be more cooperative, for lack of a better term.
Yeah. Because now that we're talking about it, now I'm going, oh, that's probably why. He probably was just out of it.
That very well could be. I like that theory. But yeah. Oliver Queen falls for the Joker trick from The Dark Knight is what I had in my notes. I was like, oh, he got Jokered because go back to The Dark Knight. And this kind of ties into the old school bat checklist we used to have. In The Dark Knight, the Joker puts his hostages in police costumes so the cops will shoot them and puts his gunmen in hostage costumes. And I was like, oh, man, this is a total Joker move.
I know. Because also, you know, if you think about it, Ollie was also kind of like that switch was flipped. In the meeting that he had with that DA, Adrian Chase, because Adrian was like, we're going to put a to-kill order. I'm going to tell the cops to shoot to kill. So it's almost like, you know, he has that, okay, the cops are going to shoot to kill. Got that whole memories from being the Hood coming up to the surface. So, man, three arrows right to the heart. Whew.
Well, I mean, we did see Oliver has reverted back to season one form a little bit, because with Damian, he put killing back on the table. It's not the first resort anymore like it used to be. The first resort still tends to be shoot him in the knee or shoot him in the leg because they used to be an adventurer.
And he did kill earlier this season.
That's true. So the precedent is there, but it seems like he is only killing when he has less of a choice versus in season one, it was, if you're a bad guy, you're dead. It doesn't matter who you are. I'm putting an arrow in you and you're not going to be a problem anymore.
Exactly.
So it was a cool fight, but Prometheus played him the entire time, the second time they met up. And I cannot wait to see where this goes in the back half of the season, because Prometheus is playing the mind games. And that's the thing you can do with Ollie, is play mind games with him. That's what puts him off his physical game, is when you screw with his head. And he just made him do something that in Oliver's mind is going to be unforgivable to his team, and that's put down an innocent by accident.
Oh, yeah. That is true.
And you got to think, that's going to be in the back of Oliver's head every time he goes out now, is this going to happen again? So it's a total mind game that can pay off for a while.
Oh, because he's going to doubt himself even more now.
Yep.
Oh, my goodness.
Maybe this is what takes him off the killing train again, as he realizes, I can't take that risk anymore. What if I kill the wrong person again, or the wrong person gets in the crossfire? If you shoot Dinger, at least Billy wouldn't have been dead if he was kneecapping him. Probably wouldn't be walking anytime soon, but he wouldn't be dead.
That's true. Because the way Prometheus has been able to do homework is one of the things, if you don't mind the flashbacks, how it was from not Russia, because, you know, we were thinking flashback Russia this season. No, this time, flashback to basically year one of him coming back to Star City, being the Hood. I think it was interesting that it is that part of this, it's deep enough into, like, say, season one, that Diggle knows, because it's Diggle and him in the first version of the Arrow Cave.
Yes, the basement of Verdant.
Yes. And there's Diggle being that voice like he's always been. Hey, maybe you shouldn't be doing this.
Right. And if you go and try and place this episode in the chronology of things, it's before Felicity knows he's the Hood. So it's somewhere before, I want to say, the mid-season finale of season one is when this takes place. So we're probably talking somewhere between like episode 4 and episode 12 is where this would fit into the timeline. I don't think we actually got anything definitive that can help us place it.
No, not only that Diggle knows, Diggle brings food from Big Belly Burger. Felicity obviously already knows Oliver, and he's probably been lying to her. So he's probably come to her a few other times.
Right, because he's still making his BS excuses for things like he did before. Like, oh, this guy dropped his laptop and I want to get it back to him, but it's all shot up and I kind of need some help. I mean, that kind of stuff again.
Yeah, so it's probably not right when he met Felicity. It's probably a little bit deeper into that, but obviously where... Oh my God, it was so nice seeing her being all adorkable with the red pen and making the...
Wasn't it though?
Oh, I could pull things with my magic fingers and it's just so great to see her like that again.
So I really enjoyed going back 4 years in this flashback, but at the same time, I'm really curious about what's going on in Russia because this is what, 2 episodes at least we haven't gone back to Russia? It might be 3 if I'm remembering correctly.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, granted, they probably do need to stretch it out a little bit because this is the last year of their... real flashbacks potentially, so who knows, but I'm really curious what's happening in Russia, and I'm kind of hoping that when we return in January, the flashbacks, as much as I enjoy 4 years ago, I think we have to go 5 years ago back to Russia just so we can continue seeing how that develops.
Well, it was kind of hinted at, because when he's talking about Prometheus and that special flip move, he talks about learning that from a woman in Russia. So obviously sometime in Russia, when he's with the Pravda and everything, he must undergo some more fight training for him to learn more special moves.
Right. And we'll just have to see when that comes into play. That obviously is going to have to come into play, like you said, in these Russian flashbacks in the back half of the season. So we know we have to go back to Russia at some point. But, you know, I'm totally okay if we do a few more 4 year ago flashbacks sprinkled in here and there, because it makes sense for Prometheus's narrative.
Yeah, because no matter who Prometheus is, and we'll talk about that, it's all tied to the list. I think we can both agree that this has to do with the list, not Russia, not anything on the island. I think we can definitely say after tonight, it's about the list.
Right. And I have to say, what I have enjoyed with these flashbacks to season 4 and bringing things back is they are not trying to sweep under the rug the murdery backstory of Oliver Queen when he first comes into place. Because remember, season 1 of Arrow was incredibly brutal. People came in like, oh, it's going to be a Green Arrow show. Who cares? And you watch the first episode, and he's putting fools down left and right. He was killing a lot of people before they started backing off of that. And it seems like since he transitioned into Green Arrow, they'd kind of dropped the fact that, hey, the Hood was really not that great a guy when he first started into things, and now they have no choice but to revisit that, and you kind of see just how much Oliver has grown since he was just that angry vigilante trying to fulfill his father's last wishes. Now he's trying to save the city in other ways.
Like being a mayor who can throw a Christmas party.
Well, his sister throws it for him.
That's true. And he's very impressed with the party.
He is. I really did enjoy it. We can start talking about the characters. Thea getting to name drop Moira. I was like, oh, we just saw her last week. It's good to tie back into that and be like, oh yeah, Moira Queen was really good at that. And the Queen family Christmas party was a big deal in the older days of Starling City.
Exactly. And I do like how they brought in what happened last week with the mentors, how she does say that, you know, being in that dream world makes me appreciate, you know, like what I have now. And it sort of like renewed me. And it's kind of like almost she was like healed a little bit.
Right. And Oliver equates it to watching It's a Wonderful Life in his speech to begin there. And I sort of get that. And you kind of have that same parallel with Thea. As painful as it was at the time, it's healing for her. And she puts the suit on. The question I have is it a full-time thing? Is it a one-time thing? Because she knows that Oliver's sort of spiraling out of control after being betrayed by someone that was on the team. And she wants to go and have his back for that. I'm very curious to see whether she continues to suit up going forward.
I hope she does.
I do too, because I've missed having Speedy out there. And she's arguably one of the most talented remaining team members of Team Arrow.
Exactly.
I mean, she's Malcolm Merlyn's daughter, guys. He trained her. In like a season, she learned how to be a giant badass.
I know. And she still is. She's just gotten better. More refined, quicker, more efficient. It's like, this is now like the time we really need Speedy. She's in peak performance.
Right. And she's probably in a better headspace now where she feels that she can become involved in things. Now, speaking of someone who's not in a good headspace, that's definitely Oliver at the end of this episode.
Yeah. One of the things I have to admit is I'm proud of the fact that he went in there to the Arrow Cave, stood in front of everyone, and just told the truth.
There was no way to sweep it under the rug. Regardless, he was going to tell the truth, but there was no way you could hide it either at this point in time.
Yeah, but just like the way he told it, he didn't try to dance around it. He just was like, Prometheus dressed him up. I messed up. I killed him. There we go.
Right. And Stephen Amell had said prior to episode 101, and so had the showrunners, that you're going to see a bit of a different Oliver Queen moving forward after his experience with the Dominators and the flashback and things like that. And this might be part of that, where he knows he has to tell them, he has to be open, completely honest about it, and then he kind of reverts to Foreman saying, you all need to get away from me, but when they say no, he doesn't continue to press the issue.
And it's Diggle who steps up and he says, no man, we are where we need to be. He leads the group hug, basically.
Well, he does, but then you've got two that don't really join in the hug. They step a little closer, but Thea and Felicity don't really join in that group hug moment. And Felicity's a bit understandable why she wouldn't, because while she knows it's Prometheus' fault that all of this happened, Oliver is still the one that pulled the bowstring.
Exactly.
Now, what's that going to do to their friendship?
Oh, well, I hope they still be friends. I hope this kills Felicity.
Well, yeah, I think we all do. Yeah, I mean, considering there's an interview I read, I don't think we put it in the news, but one of their regrets is how much they fast-tracked Felicity in season four.
Yeah, they finally have admitted that they saw the chemistry and they sort of ran with it a little too fast, too hard, and not really took their time with it, and I completely agree.
Let's see, talking about some of the other characters, Diggle, we leave him in a very uncomfortable place as this wraps up, and I have no idea how this came into motion and how they're going to get him out of it. And what I mean by that is he gets a call at the end of the episode from Lila saying she needs him at the safe house where she and John Jr. are. And he shows up and there's just a bunch of soldiers there or SWAT team operatives or something that just point their guns at him. And that's the last we see of him, is just kind of putting his gun down and surrendering.
Yeah. So I wonder, do you think Lila actually called, or do you think it was Prometheus with his voice thingy that did it?
I am thinking it was Prometheus, because I don't see the play where Lila would bring in her husband to get arrested unless she had no choice to save John Jr.'s life in some way, shape, or form. That's the only way I can see her making that call, is if someone was holding a gun to her child's head and said, you either do this or your kid dies.
Yeah, I think it's probably one of those two things.
I have no idea where they're going to go from here, considering they just broke Diggle out. Is there going to be another heist episode where they break Diggle back out, or...
Well, Jeff being ahead here, the CW app actually released a promo for next episode, not next week's episode, but in January 25th. You actually do see Diggle in prison, and he tells Oliver that he plans on standing up to the charges this time. And Oliver says that he knows a lawyer, so I don't know who they could be bringing in, but Ollie says he knows a guy.
I don't know who it would be. I'm sure there's some little Easter egg comment they'll have that'll make it be someone who's significant to the comics in some way, shape, or form, but I don't have a prediction.
Neither do I.
At least it's not like Diggle's getting captured by Prometheus. Prometheus is just potentially putting it in motion, because that was my other concern, is that Prometheus was putting Diggle in a cage to get to Oliver.
No, I think he's just taking Diggle off the board, you know, to further get into Oliver's head. You know, Diggle grounds Oliver, basically kind of brings his spirit back up from time to time. So not having Diggle around is going to hurt.
Yeah, that's very true. I mean, plus, from a fan perspective, I really like the chemistry that Diggle has with Oliver in there. So I'm going to miss that being as good while he's in jail, but it just builds up for you looking forward to it going forward, I think.
Exactly.
See, Felicity, we talked about her a little bit. This just ends very tragically for her, especially after she makes the leap of introducing the boyfriend to the team.
Yeah, I think we should have seen the writing on the wall. You know, she was there with him. He actually had lines. He had moments with her. It's sort of like a cue from The Walking Dead. If you ever watched that show, like whenever a minor character all of a sudden has big moments, it's like, oh, they're dead.
Yeah, you're going to die.
Yeah, so poor Billy. I mean, Felicity was very awkward at the party, but they had moments. And then he's like, I'm going to go after Prometheus. And she's like, no, don't. And he's like, that's my job.
Exactly. No, there was a Felicity quote. There it is. So you guys want to go on a double date sometime? And then just kind of this awkward look between her, Oliver, reporter lady, whose name I'm forgetting all of a sudden, and Billy. And I was like, there's the awkward Felicity we all know and love.
I know. Exactly, because that's Susan Williams. She was the date.
That's it. Yeah, and I don't think that double date's happening now.
Well, considering one of the four are dead.
Well, we've got the Legends Round time travel. We'll be fine.
I know Rory makes that Flashpoint joke, and Renee was like, what? And Dig ends up with five kids this time? So I think they've learned their time travel lesson.
I love the conversation, though, about Flashpoint, where Wild Dog's like, so you think in another one of those flashpoints, there's a place where I had a chance with a girl like Thea? She's like, no. Just shoots him down. And you're like, oh.
In every dimension, in every timeline. Sorry, Renee. You're just not her type.
It was hilarious. It was one of the fun moments in this episode that then turned very dark near the end. I guess Quentin is still in rehab, we can figure, because we didn't see him this week. Let's see, I'm trying to think of some of the other characters we hadn't talked about. We talked about Curtis. Curtis's stuff kind of ends on a sour note, too, and I'm sure there's going to be repercussions going forward with his interactions with the team.
Yeah, you know, Curtis had a I need to be me moment, and, you know, even Paul said that seeing you these past few months or weeks, however long it's been, going out at night, doing whatever, you've been happy. And Curtis is like, being Mr. Terrific gives him purpose, and he knows that's what he wants to do.
It's just it cost him his husband in this case, because I understand where Paul's coming from. He's like, I just can't watch you do this. I can't sit here and worry about, are you going to come home this night?
Yeah, but you know, this is going to be really morbid, and I'm sorry, but every time you say goodbye to somebody, it could be the last time.
That is true.
And that's life. I mean, it's sad. You know, that's why I try to, like, whenever I say goodbye to someone, we're all good. And it's always a positive note, because you don't know.
Part of it might be he just needs to embrace the change and he needs to step away from the situation. And it could be maybe a couple episodes down the road, he comes back. But this is Arrow, and we like to put our characters through the emotional ringer. So I think it could be a while. There could be teased reconciliations. And then Prometheus is probably going to kill him. Just when we think everything's going to come right. I'm not trying to be dark. That's just the way these things work anymore, it seems like.
Don't kill Paul. Oh, my God. We killed Billy. Don't kill Paul.
That's the trend. Kill everyone's loved ones this season, I think.
Well, I guess that's one way to thin the herd, but come on.
It's how you break the team up, break the dynamic. Should I really be associating with Oliver? It's going to cause everyone I know and love to get killed. I mean, it's why when they find out Prometheus knows who they all are, that they start putting people in safe houses.
Oh, that's true.
Paul doesn't really go to the safe house. He just leaves town.
Yeah. Oh, man.
So he's got a sort of target on his back, I think. I don't think it's actually going to happen, but they want you to have that lingering thought, that lingering doubt of, uh-oh, what's going to happen to Paul?
Paul better live.
Well, I hope he does, but much like The Walking Dead, I always prepare myself for pretty much any character we meet to be killed off at some point in time. And just like Battlestar Galactica also, anyone could die at any time. And if you're a Game of Thrones fan, I'm told it's anytime you like a character, they're going to die. So that's just today's entertainment. You've got to get used to it.
Oh, watch our show and watch your characters die.
Everything you love goes to die here. Oh, jeez. Let's see. I'm looking through the list of some of the other characters we need to touch on. Susan Williams. I had a note in my notes as we did this. Like you mentioned, she's Oliver's date to the Christmas party. You had a note that she drinks the Russian vodka when Oliver goes to her apartment late at night. And they made a point of having that centered in shot with the Cyrillic text facing out our way. So I'm wondering, is that a red herring? Or are we supposed to read something into it?
I think she's connected to Russia somehow.
So do I.
Because she mentions the Russian journalist. She's interested in Oliver during that time. She's definitely connected to Russia, at least to Russia.
I thought so too. And then when she had her intimate moment with Oliver, my notes were, oh, she's Talia from Dark Knight Rises now. She's working against him and then decides to have a moment.
Well, we all have said that he's going to have sex with her and it's going to crash and burn.
It's the queen curse.
Right. So do we want to talk about Prometheus before we talk about the last scene of the show?
That's what I was going to ask. I think we should talk about Prometheus first. And I know you have some theories on Prometheus, so I'm going to turn it over to you.
Okay. So we all know that I have had a list of suspects since we first learned about Prometheus. And in this episode, we didn't get an unmasking, but we got a lot of clues. Now, the episode is like, it's Justin Claiborne's son. That's it. He would be 30, old enough, but...
That seems too easy to me.
Yeah, it seems too easy to me, too. This is obviously someone who's connected to the list because this person knows the list, knows Oliver, had the list, knows Oliver has been trained, has figured out somehow where Oliver's been trained, because obviously has found that Russian teacher, if he knows that exact same move, has somehow had access to how the dead bodies were positioned. This is a lot of work. To me, I think if it was just Claiborne's son, it would have been, yes, you killed my father, unmask, not prepare to die. Because if you're calling him Claiborne's son, why wouldn't you just take off the mask and go like, yeah, that's exactly right, and I'm going to mess with your head some more? I don't think it's that easy.
I don't either.
I don't know. You know, I actually have in here, could Susan Williams be connected to it? Because again, we have that Russian connection. Obviously, Prometheus has either been to Russia or found that Russian teacher.
And she's done a good job of forcing herself into Oliver's life, first as the adversarial reporter and then developing a rapport with him and becoming friends and then becoming whatever they are now. I don't think it's labeled yet, but...
Yeah, it's just, there's a lot of layers. This is going to be a long game. You know, in my list of suspects, I don't think it's probably not going to be Tommy Merlin now. They made that comment about how he is on Chicago Med. And he was in Ollie's Dementor Dream as somebody who was proud of him, as was Roy, as was Dad. So it's like, was that also a false lead or, oh, this is good. It's to me, I am still going to have my list of suspects active until the mask comes off.
Exactly. I have no clue who it is, but I have theories and they've done a very good job of keeping us guessing. And that's exactly why I think saying it is the son, Justin Claiborne's son, is just far too easy, because it's like everything fell into place in 5 minutes in the mid-season finale. It's too easy.
Do you have any ideas?
I don't have any. At this point, I'm just sitting here going, is it someone from the Bratva? Is it someone associated with the Bratva that has come after him? I'm wondering if the flashback comes into play more.
Yeah, so I don't think it's that easy. I think there's a lot more going on.
I actually think it's Lieutenant Worf, because... Look, I asked Steven, I asked a few other people after the show, and I looked on Reddit. Is it just me, or does Prometheus sound like Michael Dorn?
He does.
And I can't find Michael Dorn credited on IMDb or anything like that for it. But I swear, I've heard Michael Dorn's voice in so many things, both animated and on TV. I'm sitting there, I'm like, I swear, it's Michael Dorn. It's gotta be him.
That would be fun.
But I can't confirm it. I guess we got to talk about the major reveal that kind of left many people shocked and going, what the hell?
Yes, it is the return of Chris's favorite character of all time.
Tommy?
Laurel.
Oh.
Right there, like Oliver, after his night of sexy times with Susan, goes into the Arrow Cave, and standing right there is Laurel Lance.
She's just like, hey, Ollie. And you're going, wait, are you a ghost? Are you just a personification of Oliver's guilt that shows up in the form of her? Or are you real?
She's real. So
I have theories.
Why don't you go ahead and share your theories first, Chris?
Well, I have two, and the one is the simplest. Everyone can say, oh, Barry screwed up again. Flashpoint. I don't think that's it, because we would have seen that shake out. Now, I was getting caught up on Legends of Tomorrow recently. I just finished the episode in the 80s where Sarah Lance basically taunts Damian Dark in the basement of the White House and says, I know how your future ends. I know how your arc ends. Your wife dies. You turn on your daughter. Everything you know is going to turn to hell. And she goes, I just want to watch, or something to that effect. So she basically clued him into what his future is. He then talked to Eobard and said, I have to find a way to change this. I think that Sarah has inadvertently changed Laurel's future by revealing that to Damian, that everything he's planning is going to be all for naught.
I also have a Legends idea that perhaps, because when Laurel dies, she's in the room, she talks to Oliver, Oliver leaves, and then Laurel's in the hospital room by herself, right?
I believe so, yes.
So there could be Sarah takes her and Gideon fixes her, and maybe there's a fake Laurel body that they take. This is stretching, I know. I'm just theories. Laurel from Earth 2.
The Siren.
Yeah.
Yeah, Steven had thrown out the idea it's Siren. I said, but her hair was dark. Granted, you can lighten your hair and things like that. But from what I recall, she was a brunette, not a blonde. The Siren. But again, that's easily fixed. I had another Legends theory that just kind of popped in my head is we haven't seen Rip Hunter. Rip Hunter could have had to assemble his own other team of Legends to support things. And what better thing to do but to pluck someone from the timeline right before they're about to die, so that you can use them for your purposes, and if they die, well, they were going to die anyways, and if not, you return them right before they are about to pass. That's also a major stretch, and I don't see that being the case. There's going to be something else with the reveal of where Rip Hunter is in Legends.
So, because, yeah, I watched that Legends episode too, and it's like, wait a minute, isn't telling someone their future messing with it?
One would think. I mean, but granted, to quote the great Master Yoda, always in motion the future is, so who knows? It could just change on its own, but I'm sure that telling someone their future would greatly affect the outcome.
Yeah, because also, spoiler alert for Legends, well, it was part of the crossover, so we talked about it before, how Stein gave himself a daughter.
Right. So you can see there's echoes of things they've screwed up that's impacting our timeline.
Yeah, so, yeah, could Laurel be an aberration? And the Legends are like, wait a minute.
Man, what a twist if they make it so that then Sarah has to put down her sister that's a timeline aberration that never should have happened. Woo-hoo-hoo, that put people through the ringer. But hey, it's stuff in the Brillantiverse. They like to put their characters through the ringer for our entertainment.
Ouch, man. This is dark.
It's really dark. Is there? Let's transition out. Is there anything else from this week's episode we need to touch on before we get any darker and depress all of our subscribers?
No. You know, we should have seen Laurel being alive by this line that Felicity says. In our town, people who are dead turn out to be secretly alive almost every Wednesday.
Yeah, I had that in my notes too. And I was like, oh yeah, Wednesday, well played.
And then we get her. So, you know, it's really good. I have to admit, this first 9 episodes have been really solid, and I've been really happy with the quality of this season so far.
Yes, I've enjoyed it so far as well. And we touched on a little bit what we have coming up in January 25th. We know the episode is Who Are You that's coming forward. The summary on here says, according to the clip on the app, Diggle is back in jail, but this time he vows to face the charges. Oliver and the team are looking for the mother of Claiborne's child. Also, they have to ease Laurel back into present-day life. Was that what they had written somewhere, or was that interpretation? Because present-day life could be a very big keyword for us in our conspiracy theories.
Okay, Diggle says, what about Laurel? And then Oliver says, like, you know, like we filled her in on Prometheus and stuff. And then Diggle says, yeah, she's got a lot to catch up on.
Okay, so it could just be the stuff that she missed since her, I'll use air quotes now, death, because we're not sure if she actually died anymore.
Right.
Boy, that's going to mess up Lance when he comes back, too. Oh, God. Just when he's starting to accept the fact that his daughter's dead, she's back again.
Why are they making Lance the punching bag?
Lance is the whipping boy for all of this stuff, it seems like. The poor man. I don't know how he's going to deal with it. He's going to start drinking again.
No, he can't. Oh. He can't.
Oh.
I would rather sacrifice Paul for quitting sobriety. Okay? Like, if they got a choice, let's make Quentin okay.
So, longtime listeners of the show, you might be familiar with something that started in season 1 and 2 that we called the Bat Checklist. The show was very Batman inspired at one point in time, so it kind of became a running gag for us to talk about all the Batman influences, things like that. It's now evolved more into a DC Easter egg and pop culture reference element from an episode, and comicbook.com does a wonderful job of breaking those down. And each week we try and go through the list and talk about some of those Easter eggs and how it might fit into the comic universe or other TV shows, things like that. So Michelle, why don't you start us out?
Sure. Judas Contract, a young female team member who is recruited into Team Arrow and then seduced to the dark side and ends up becoming a sleeper agent for the villain, is pretty much exactly the plot to the classic New Teen Titans storyline, The Judas Contract.
Oliver talks about Christmas movies in here. According to Stephen Amell's recent Facebook Live video, he shares Oliver's favorite Christmas movie, Die Hard, and the "it's true" he delivered after saying so in the episode was actually a Stephen Amell-ism, not Oliver Queen's. His second choice is It's a Wonderful Life, and it's an interesting one considering, quote, "I was very lucky to be able to rewatch that movie last week," was said in the episode. Which, of course, is not a thing that happened. He kind of had his own version of It's a Wonderful Life, where the Dominators put him in a perfect timeline, for lack of a better term.
Big Belly Burger. The mention is because the to-go bag for the DC Universe's favorite burger joint was the focus of a shot that hung on for a few seconds and transitioned from the present day to the flashbacks. That's a lot of camera time for a fast food container, and a really good use of... That was a great transition.
And we really only get it mentioned in The Flash that much anymore, so it was kind of nice to see it narrow once again. Next up, Claiborne. Justin Claiborne's name did in fact appear in the list, but we never saw him dealt with in season 1. All of the scenes here were calling back to the first year of the series and were entirely new material here for the flashbacks. This, of course, opens up the question of whether we might see some more stories in flashbacks like this in future episodes, which I'm all for.
Yes, we get to see the old uniform again. Almost every Wednesday, the line that Felicity said about people being dead, they made a joke here that says, weirdly enough, never during the summer or between mid-December and late January, though.
That works pretty well. So the callback that we all saw here, so much season 1 referencing. We had the hood returned, Oliver's season 1 costume. The kill list is back. We're back in the original Arrow cave, the original kind of mission and arguments he had with Diggle about it. It was really cool to see that reversion to form of the hood, not the cleaner, I guess, Green Arrow, who's not killing as many people.
True. The red pin is a nice callback to some of Felicity Smoke's earliest appearances, and that makes it worth breaking out to talk separately about IT girl Felicity, back when Oliver was still making up outlandish stories to get her help instead of just coming clean with her.
Next up is A.K. Desmond Pharmaceutical. It seems worth noting, since Dr. Alchemy is such a part of The Flash this season, that A.K. Desmond Pharmaceutical could plausibly be considered a wink and nod reference to Albert Desmond, who is a chemist who would go on to become Dr. Alchemy in the comics. Unlikely, but it is possible. Good pull by the folks at comicbook.com.
Yes. Make the city great again. Obviously, in his final moments, when Claiborne is trying to appeal to Oliver's ideas about saving the city, he says that businesses like his can make the city great again, which in the context of last year's Worth of Public Life feels suspiciously like a reference to Donald Trump's Make America Great Again campaign slogan.
That's true. They would have filmed this after the results of the November election, I assume, so it's entirely possible.
Well, he was saying Make America Great Again his entire campaign, so even if they did it before, it still would have been a callback.
That's true. So that wraps up the Easter eggs and things we had mentioned this week. If there's stuff that you guys saw that we didn't bring up, please feel free to send us in some feedback. We'll give you guys the feedback instructions and directions at the end of the episode. This is the point in the show, though, where we transition to some Arrow-specific news that we've gotten from interviews or websites, things like that. So, Michelle, why don't you tell us about Season 5's final scene? Have we actually seen it?
Well, now that Arrow has reached Season 5 and has no plans of slowing down, the plan has changed slightly. As Guggenheim said, spoiler alert, Ollie's rescue from Lee and Yu is going to end up being the Season 5 finale. Season 5's flashback story arc will still end by replaying the first moments of the series, but there's now much more show to come after that moment. You know, just because it ends there doesn't mean that that's it. That there's definitely more show to come after Season 5.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, and they've already shown a mechanism they could use for flashbacks post-Season 5, which is fill in the gaps of the past seasons, because it worked pretty well this week. So, I'll take the next piece. We sort of touched on it. Stephen Amell gave some insight into the big twist in the mid-season finale. It's kind of appropriate I have to cover this, because we all know it deals with my favorite character. So, in a Facebook video, Stephen Amell discussed the return of Laurel. He said that tonight's script was the first time in a long time he was legitimately shocked and when he turned the page for that reveal. He also said he was skeptical at first of the idea of bringing back another character from the dead, but now that there's several episodes down the line in production, he thinks the story that comes out of it is a good one. So Stephen Amell is on board with the resurrection of Laurel. I can deal with it.
If they make her character better, like they were in Season 4, I think we can live with it.
Yeah, I think that's fair. If they make it better, they make her less whiny and likable, I can be okay with it. It's just they did a very good job of making her unlikable in Season 2, and it takes a lot to fix that.
Oh boy, does it ever.
Doesn't it really? Let's talk about a likable character, though. What does David Ramsey have to say about Felicity?
Well, during a panel in a convention in Brazil, David Ramsey was asked to chime in on Felicity. For me, he says, I like the idea of Felicity not defining herself through her relationship with a man. I like the idea that she can be her own person, and she can be strong and feminine, own the company, without pining over a man, Oliver or any other.
Nice. So that wraps up our Arrow news. We do want to talk about general DC TV news. So that means it could be, you know, Flash, Legends of Tomorrow, Supergirl, Constantine Season 2 one day maybe. Hashtag bring back Constantine. You never know. I can dream.
Oh, right in the heart, Chris. Right in the heart.
SP wasn't here to make the Constantine reference. I did it for you, SP. I did it for you. So I think we should talk about one of the big things, the crossover. What did this do for the CW in this case, Michelle?
Fortnite DC crossover gives the CW its most watch week in 6 years.
Wow.
Paid off big for the CW, pulling in 2.3 million viewers for its most watched week in 6 years. For the week of November 28th, the CW was up 20% in total viewers versus the same week last year. Up 15% in adults 18 to 49, and up 16% in adults 18 to 34, according to Nielsen stats. Supergirl had its most watched episode this season and matched its season premiere ratings in both adults 18 to 34 and adults 18 to 49. The Flash saw its most watched episode in almost 2 years and had its highest rated episode of the season. Arrow delivered the series' most watched and highest rated episode since last season's crossover episode, and DC's Legend of Tomorrow had its most watched episode ever with 3.39 million viewers and its highest in adults 18 to 34. Like, this did amazing.
Yeah, so the takeaway here is it might have been a pain in the butt to put this entire crossover together and get everyone to jump between different shows, but it was wildly successful. So my guess is we'll see it again next year.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a fair bet.
Made money.
Yeah. Made a bunch of money. So let's talk about Supergirl real quick. A very interesting character. Mr. Mitzelplick has been reported. He is going to be appearing in Supergirl for 2 episodes in 2017. The character was created by writer Jerry Siegel and artist Ira Yarbrough for 1944 Superman number 30. If you're not familiar, Mr. Mitzelplick is a mischievous imp from the fifth dimension who delights in tormenting the Man of Steel. He's much more of a fun-loving prankster than an actual villain. His fifth-dimensional technology appears as magic to us three-dimensional beings. The limits of his powers are vast and unknown at this point. If Famously, he can only be stopped and returned to his home dimension by tricking him into saying his name backwards. And I will not even try to do so because I've heard them say it in cartoons and stuff like that, but I cannot remember how it's said in my head. So just say Mitzelplick backwards, and that's what you have to say to make him go away. It's an interesting character.
Yeah. I like how they're sort of digging into Superman's deal on Supergirl. I like that.
Yes.
And speaking of Supergirl, there's this wonderful story this week about how Supergirl and a super duper gay comic book clerk helped save a girl's life. In Fort Wayne, Indiana, this comic book store clerk saw this young girl come in and they started talking, and the girl didn't realize that a gay woman could be happy until she saw the Alex Danvers coming out arc on Supergirl. And basically, you know, to help the girl out, she suggested some comics such as Batwoman, Elegy, Midnighter, and Gotham Central. And the girl didn't have money for all of them, so the clerk actually bought some of them for her. It's a really touching story, and it's just amazing.
Yeah, that's a great story. I love to see things like that. It's the power of comics and comic book TV and how that can help people. And then you also have moments where your showrunners kind of admit they wanted to play around with the shippers some. There was an interview that Entertainment Weekly did with producer Andrew Kreisberg regarding the crossover, because we're back to that for a second, of that multiple moments with Kara were ultimately cut from the three episodes, including one where Sarah asked out the Girl of Steel. There was a little exchange between Sarah and Kara that I really liked. I didn't think we even filmed it. He said, where Sarah says, "Hey, do you want to get a drink when this all over?" And Kara goes, "I think you want to meet my sister." Just the idea of starting the Sarah and Alex shippers going dot, dot, dot. So I kind of like that thought of, yeah, we could poke our fans a little bit.
Wow. That's just mean.
Well, I mean, you could, it's not unheard of to have moments in there where they do things like that. I mean, that's how Elicity started, if we remember right, is it was, hey, let's poke the fans with this a little bit. They seem to enjoy it. And then it blew up and kind of spiraled a little out of control.
But I have to admit, I've been watching Supergirl. We like Alex with Maggie. It's been called Sandverse. That's their shipper name.
Ooh, I like that. I like that a lot. So you had some interesting news that came out of The Flash this week. Why don't you bring that up for us, Michelle?
Yeah, in a piece on comicbook.com called Mark Hamill and John Wesley Shipp on the Biggest Surprises Reprising Their Roles on The Flash, they had like a little comments from each. But I pulled out a very interesting fact. Shipp starred in The Flash in 1990 and 1991 with Hamill as a recurring villain. While Hamill was filming Star Wars The Force Awakens, a new TV version of The Flash was coming together. 3 years later, against all odds, he and the producers have found a way for Hamill to make an appearance as James Jesse in each mid-season finale so far.
Son of a gun, that's true. It has been each mid-season finale. I didn't realize it until I saw it on paper.
I didn't either. And it was like, whoa.
That's pretty awesome. And give me more Mark Hamill on TV, I'm happy. Give me more Mark Hamill on screen, I'm happy. Basically, give me more Mark Hamill in my life, I'm good.
You know, I think it's really cool that someone like Mark Hamill would be willing to just pop on Flash. I mean, he was on this week's episode for like 3 minutes, but he still did it. It was great.
If you go back and if you've seen some of the interviews with him, I strongly suggest if you ever get a chance, Kevin Smith has a podcast called Fat Man on Batman. He did a two-parter with Mark Hamill where 5 minutes of it max was Star Wars, and the rest of it was his experiences in Hollywood, his experiences voicing the Joker and things like that. And you learn that Mark Hamill is just a comic book geek like many of the rest of us. So he probably just really enjoys getting to do this. He's like, oh yeah, I'm in. This is awesome. So I could see that just being the case here, is him being like, this is fun. I don't care if I'm only on screen for 3 minutes. He's having a bit of a career renaissance right now anyways.
Wow. So Chris, you have more about the superhero crossover.
Right. I'm a little fixated on the crossover like many other people. So TV Line had an interview again with Andrew Kreisberg where they brought up two questions. The first, will Supergirl visit Earth 1 again? Well, now that Kara has a way to communicate and travel across Earths, it's certainly easier to execute. According to Andrew Kreisberg, the next time we do it, it means it doesn't necessarily have to be because Oliver and Barry need Kara. It could be because Kara needs them. However, he does note that nothing is in the works, seeing as how we just barely survived this one. So yes, there is potential that they could do another crossover fairly easily with that MacGuffin in place, but there are not plans at this point in time. And finally, one last point. The crossover is all about aliens, and the aliens were kind of seen in public at one point. So they asked, does the world know that ETs exist? And Kreisberg said a line was cut for time in which the G-Man known as Glasses says, "Cover up what? A dozen weather satellites falling out of orbit?" Guggenheim then explained, "People see the ships, but no one ever really saw the Dominators. The way we're sort of playing at going forward is that Glasses is good at his job, and when he says he's going to cover it up, he's going to cover it up." Andrew Kreisberg adds in, "There's a mention of it in The Flash that the threat of aliens brought out all the crazies, but we're sort of Doctor Who-ing it."
Glossing over it big time, basically.
Yeah, well, it was a fun spectacle. Don't kind of forget that that happened for a little bit. We're going to go back to the rest of our stories. It's okay, guys.
Oh, my goodness. Also in the show notes, we have links to different interviews. One with Joel Nickel, who plays Ragman. Another one with Madison McLaughlin, who plays Artemis, and it's about her betrayal and how it's going to play out for the rest of the season. And another one with Echo Kellum, who talks about Curtis and the fallout from this episode.
Very interesting. So we are at that point in the show. We need to start wrapping things up. We're at about the hour mark, so we're mostly on time. But we do like to close things out with touching on some feedback we've gotten from listeners. And Black Adam has come through for us yet again. SP sent me a voicemail from him this morning. Why don't we play that for everyone watching live or listening at a later date right now?
Hey guys, it's Adam calling in with feedback on this week's episode of Arrow. And wow, Prometheus is full of mind games, and we know the source of the angst for the rest of the season with Oliver accidentally killing Felicity's boyfriend. With all the mind games they've been playing, I'm not even sure if who they think is Prometheus actually is, though the fact that they did flashbacks to season one to stuff we hadn't seen does kind of imply that there's more to this than just another random tie-in like all the innocent murders with the anagrams and stuff a few weeks ago. Can't wait to hear what you guys think. Talk to you later. Bye.
So, Adam, I think we're all on the same page here that we think it's all a little too easy with this reveal. There's more mind games yet to come.
A lot.
And that's half the fun of it, isn't it?
Exactly. So thank you, Adam, for that voicemail. As you know, I do live tweet as many of the shows as I can. Obviously, Supergirl, Flash, and Arrow. I do live tweet. I would like to thank everyone who participates, everyone who likes our YouTube, watches us on YouTube, likes our Facebook page, all that type of stuff. But I do want to do a highlight. I had a Twitter conversation with Comic Girl at Aquaman's Wife. I like that.
Nice handle.
We discussed Iris in The Flash about how we both want her to be more. It started off with her saying, "Let Iris West thrive because she is more than a West Allen and deserves a life and news reporter journalist storyline like in the comics." And I said, 100% agree. And we just had a little conversations from that. It's always fun finding other fans of shows and having to talk with them.
It really is. And we do love getting feedback from you guys. So please feel free to reach out to us on Facebook, on Twitter, on the YouTube comments, pretty much any way you can find us. Feel free to send us comments and we'll touch on at the end of the show what our voicemail number is. We welcome any phone calls regarding theories about what's going on coming up and what you thought about the last episode, anything like that. Please feel free to give us a ring. But before we start closing things out, this is our chance to give you guys a friendly reminder that we are, in fact, part of a network. It is the Gunna Geek Network. There are a variety of awesome geeky shows that you can find there. Things about, I don't know, Arrow, The Flash, just general geekery, video games. There's stuff there, regardless of what your taste may be. So we strongly encourage you to go over to GunnaGeekNetwork.com and check things out. And each week we try to highlight one specific show on the network, and this week I want to talk to you guys about episode 19 of the Doom Ninja podcast. It's one of the newest podcasts to the network. It's entitled Titan Up Minion Masters. This week on Doom Ninja podcast, Nate explains the new Titanfall 2 update and future plans. He also didn't check his levels before recording, so it sounds a little like doo-doo. After Nate fixed his levels, he and Ryan both go in depth on their experiences with the new early access game Minion Masters. The episode rounds out with Ryan and Nate both giving their game development updates. So if you're not familiar with the conceit here for Doom Ninja Podcast, both Ryan and Nate develop their own games. They also love to play video games, so you get a little bit of both, their experience developing stuff and their experience playing new games. So you can go check that out at GunnaGeekNetwork.com, the Doom Ninja podcast. So a giant thank you to everyone who listened or watched live over on Geeks.live. Anyone who has downloaded and listened, or any viewers on YouTube, I'd like to remind you, you can download the podcasts over on StarlingTribune.com, GunnaGeek.com. You can find us on Spreaker. You can watch the replays on YouTube. Please, please feel free to consume the show in any or all of those manners. And don't forget, you can join in live every Thursday at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern, over on Geeks.live and be a part of the show yourself.
You can watch the next live show on the Gunna Geek Network over on Geeks.live. The next live show on the network is Better Podcasting, Friday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern. And don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. We appreciate all the reviews and 5 stars, especially on iTunes. Like us on Facebook and YouTube and badger us on Twitter. You can find all of our contact information on the Gunna Geek Network at GunnaGeekNetwork.com, where you can check our forums and other shows. If you want to share your thoughts, head on over to our Facebook page, send in a tweet, or you can call us at 612-888-CAVE. That's 612-888-2283.
Well, Michelle, that was a great episode. I think it's going to wrap it up for another week. But before we get out of here, do you have any last words as we sign off? At Michelle Ely.
Hashtag 6 weeks is a long time.
Boy, you're telling me. And I am at the Chris Farrell with hashtag no laurel, no arrow? What? Oracle, I think we're done here.
This was the Starling Tribune. You can leave us feedback at GunnaGeek.com or check out our archive at StarlingTribune.com. Visit GunnaGeek.com for more podcasts. Music by Kevin MacLeod can be found at incompetech.com. This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, stories, and situations are the property of Time Warner. No infringement is intended. We will see you for the next episode of CW's Arrow.